If the Senate will please come to order. Senator Ross, are you ready on the Joint Conference Committee report to Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations? Oh, you need a mic? There you go.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am ready. Mr. President, I move that the Conference Committee report number 1 to Senate File 1 and ask that you vote aye. First, I want to talk a little bit about the goldenrod, if I could, Mr. President.
Okay.
just to give you a sense of where some of the changes are, if you look at the first page of the...
Pardon me. We need to get the report read in, and you just have to move it again. Go ahead.
Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations. Signs for the House by Representatives Harshman, Connolly, Greer, Moniz, and Stubson. For the Senate, Senators Ross, Burns, Hastert, Perkins, and Wasserberger.
I apologize. Back to you, Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Joint Conference Committee report number 1 to Senate File 1 and ask the body to vote aye. I was going to start with the goldenrod to give you a sense of where you see us at this point in time as a result of the action of your Joint Conference Committee. If you were to look on page 1 of your goldenrod and you go down to 2016 Budget Bill General Appropriations, you will see that the JAC status as of January was $2.9 million-plus dollars. The JAC position is actually, find my document here, $1,777,512 less than the JAC position in January. If you look in the House status, the column next to it, to the right, 1718 Biennium House status, you'll see $2,881,771,809, and then, of course, our figure, the next column to the right, 2.98. The Senate was $824,166. We spent less than the House. However, with the JAC action, the JAC action is actually $213,251 more than our previous position, but it is $610,915 less than the House position. So where your JAC actually ended up is closer to the Senate position than it is to the House position, which is due to the good work of your Senate Appropriations Committee. Right now, still profiled out of the LISRA is, of course, $105 million, $500,000 for local government distributions, and $80 million in House Bill 52 for school facilities appropriations. If you go to the next page, you can see those same kind of figures under general fund, but the real differences actually show up in also show up under the school foundation program. So if you recall, the Joint Appropriations Committee in January proposed a 1% reduction to the ECA in the fiscal year 2017 and a 2% reduction to 2018. That totaled $45,748,292 was the reduction based on the penny plan. The House, of course, we've discussed this before, reinstated the full ECA, but then came in and did the deal with transportation costs. So their net figure was $38,403,000. And so the difference between the House and the Senate at that point in time was $7,334,750. What we did, and you'll see this, and it's kind of hard to find, but if you look at the school foundation program, and the far right column is the Joint Conference Committee 1, you'll see that there that figure goes up to $28,393,983. That's spending. And you add in up above on net revenues before transfers, there will be some recapture from the recapture districts. It's hard to hard to see that in there, but it's in there. The difference then on the JAC proposal is that additional spending of or increasing the amount to the ECA of $9,214,477. What we did was we had a real knockdown drag out over the second year of the, well, I should say the whole thing, but we kept the 1% reduction for the first year and ultimately went down in a compromise to 1.4% in the second year. And that accounts for that additional then $9.2 million. Other than that, that should pretty well explain the real major differences. You could see, depending on what happens with the school capital construction bill, which is on the House side, a change with further reductions to the legislative stabilization reserve account as they separated out. Remember, we had the 1% statutory diversion that we had put into a separate account. They've separated that and going to keep that separate and pull out additional money from the LSRA. So that's basically the balance, the kind of the status of where we find ourselves at this point in time between the House and the Senate. Are there any questions?
Questions to the sponsor, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. When you look on page one under LISRA, you got 105 and 80 of a $185 million out of that count. Don't you have to also take, if you go up under the budget bill, broad transfers from LSRA, that's to cover this fiscal year we're in, that $36 million. Isn't that also taken out of LISRA?
Absolutely.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, and I forgot to cover that, but yes, the majority of Florida is actually very much correct. You'll see budget bill down under expenditures, the second to the last line, budget bill broad transfers from to LSRA. You'll see $36 million, which is, you recall that we had put in a budget balancer of $40 million, but the way in which our work completed, we didn't need that much, but we needed at least a little cushion, probably a little bit less than $1 million, just in case, to cover all these bills that are still out there. So I think we did a pretty good job. It was less than what we had anticipated we were at $35 million and the House was at 36.9. We're now, with that, was a placeholder there of $36 million that also comes out of the LSRA.
Mr. President?
Yes, go ahead. Mr. Majority Floor there.
Thank you, Mr. President. When we look at the Senate File 41, state-funded capital construction, and we talked about this, the Joint Conference Committee report has a $10 million additional deduct, and that's because of the effective immediately, I believe. Could you explain that to us a little bit? Then also under SIPA, you know, I thought that the CAPCON would be SIPA 17, SIPA 18, but when you look on page 3, there's nothing under SIPA. And when the money flows through, where is that going to show up on the other side of the goldenrod? I'm trying to track that.
You asking me questions? Yeah. Perkins, can you answer any of that? I can try. I mean, what will happen with me taking the last question first was the, Mr. President, the SIPA account, that won't show up until we get into the current biennium. So there isn't anything in the current. So the SIPA, that will show up, they'll start to show up. You could start to see stuff there a year from now when we start to profile what's going on in the current year. But the SIPA, if you remember, what happens is for the SIPA to start to fill up, it's the earnings above 2.5% on the spending policy amount out of the permanent trust fund. The first 2.5, the amounts above 2.5%, 1/2 of that goes to the LSRA directly, and 1/2 of that goes to SIPA directly, and so that won't start to. We won't start to see anything on that until either it's potentially if the market changed, we could potentially see something at the end of this biennium. Nobody's counting on that, but we'll see that, I think, as we go forward through the into fiscal 17 and fiscal 18.
So you either need to have forecasts of revenue or actual earnings.
Essentially, yes. And Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, that's a good point. I mean, if you, just for the body knows, what the Treasurer's Office doesn't forecast capital gains. What they do forecast is a 2.1% return on the permanent trust fund. And so, so as they forecast out, you'll never see SIPA forecasted until that's realized. So actually, I don't imagine that you would see anything in there, quite frankly, until the end of the. Of fiscal year 2017 would be the first time that something appears in there because it doesn't sweep until the end of the fiscal year.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, then to Senator Scott.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. But the other thing that pops in there is the 2 years that we do the 1% service tax diversion that covers the budget reserve 5% because we're utilizing that. So that would be part of what would go to SIPA. Or you can either take it either way, whether it comes from the budget reserve account or from the statutory reserve.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, ultimately that's right. If you remember the way that the bill was when it left here, that you have a backstop against that into the 1% statutory diversion account. It's backstopped against that in case there are no capital gains in either 17 or 18. It's backstopped against that. We'll see how that goes. That may or may not shake out. We'll see what the other body does with that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I'm trying to figure what we've done to the burn rate as we go through our reserves. And I'm just going to make some mental calculations off the top of my head. It seems to me there's two things here. On the school thing, we've added about $9 million that we're not going to save, we're going to spend. In the local government distributions that are not in this budget bill, that are in a bill that we'll have on third reading tomorrow, both houses are currently $15 million over the JAC recommendation. Because there was no way to get a source for those funds within that bill. So that adds up to about $24 million, and I see about a little more than a million decline in other JAC from the initial JAC status to this. So we're about $23 million more going into the reserves in this biennium. And that strikes me over a 10-year period. We're looking at each year drawing the reserves down vicinity $250 million when you're all done counting both the school reserves and the general fund. So I think we have lost, if these spending patterns continue, Mr. President, which I think is a reasonable assumption, what we've lost is somewhere between a year and three quarters of a year off our reserves. We're burning it at a rate that's going to exhaust the reserves. And, Mr. President, somewhere between 9.25 and 9.5 years. Mr. President, you know, the JAC, as it came to us initially, they had enough reserves for 10 years with about an $8 million cushion, and we've gone through that and then some. So I think I would say to the Senate, Mr. President, we've done some damage. The reserves aren't going to last quite as long. It's not irreparable damage. There's enough uncertainty in those elements. But we start doing that sort of thing as a regular thing. About year 8 or year 9, we're going to say we spent too fast to start with. So that's just a caution, Mr. President. I think we can live with this. Frankly, I think the Joint Appropriations Committee done an excellent job in this area. But just the mechanics of the bills, I think, this time, we got caught a bit, Mr. President, and it did hurt our reserve position. And my question is, JC, have I got that calculation of our burn rate about right?
It's pretty close.
Senator Ross?
You're absolutely correct. I don't think I can answer it any other way. You've nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I mean, that's exactly right. Just to recap, there's about $9 million more. You've got some school foundation money that is going to increase that deficit. There was $15 million, and we went from $90 to $105 million in the local government, so there's that. So those are exactly the numbers we're talking about. And so those are higher than, you know, this body came in and made those value judgments. And so, yes, that's that steepened the curve a little bit. That's absolutely right.
Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. President. So the 200, I guess I'm trying to figure out the total we spent out of LISRA. Was it 221, give or take?
Is about 220, I think.
Yeah, about 220.
I think it's about $220 million.
And I have a second question, Mr. President.
Go ahead.
I just want to check out on the external, when you go to school foundation program page 4, the external cost adjustment, that's a biennium, so it's going to cost us 28.4 for the biennium for the ECA for the schools. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, thank you.
Mr. President?
Senator Maher.
Clarification, do we have any outstanding obligations that we've obligated subsequent legislative bodies for? I mean, have we, and where I'm going to is, have we paid for all of our capital construction, or do we have other bills to pay off in the next biennium, or is this the last transfer of LISRA or other funds for capital construction, notwithstanding the prison that we haven't been able to come up with as far as what we do there? But I mean, all of UW, those buildings are all paid for by either transfer or AML funds, and the capital is all paid off in this one, or is anything hanging out there?
Senator Maher or Ross?
Well, first of all, with regards to the capital is backed up by the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund Reserve account. So that money is there to back up the capital construction. So you don't see that as a transfer or anything out of the LISRA. With regard to the others, tried to make those one-time fundings through the AML bill and so forth, so they should be paid for through the AML. I can't think of anything that is backed up outside of that at this point in time.
Okay, so this is a reduction
Senator Scott?
Mr. President, and partial answer to that one, in the health facilities, my understanding is the plan is in the, probably when you get through with all the contingencies and whatnot, is in the $140 million, I want to say, range, maybe $120 million. It's in that range. I think we've set aside about $70 total, and I could be wrong on that. There is a significant gap in that area, and I think the implications of that are that some pieces of that project, and we remember we had discussion about setting some priorities in which we do, some pieces of that project are going to have to wait until the money is available, and that may wait may be an extended period. But we have taken precautions there so that we don't have a catastrophe crisis if we have to wait on some of those. But there's a real risk there that we will have to wait on that till the money's actually in hand on some of that.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I thought I heard our chairman mention that on the other side there was some difference in what they're doing with that statutory diversion. And they are going to set aside the $80 million for school CapCon over and above that. Did I understand that correctly, that they are considering taking that $80 million out of LISRA and then leaving that statutory diversion alone? So that would be over and above what?
Senator, with respect to that, we're now getting into the CapCon bill is standalone. So we should confine to the profiles. If they switch profiles on the bill, then we'll get to consider that when that happens. But that discussion you're describing is under debate now in another house.
My apologies, Mr. President.
Ultimately we'll deal with those transfers when they come. Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Just to be real clear on the ECA, and I want to be sure we're tracking, if you go to page 4 under appropriations, you go down to 216 budget bill ECA, and you see that JAC rec is a negative $20 million. And, Mr. President, that is $20 million less of the increase, the way I read that. The House had a $58 million there because of the games they played with the transportation. Then we went back and supported the JAC position, and then the 28 is the difference plus some of the recapture. So that's how we drive through those numbers.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor, or Mr. Vice President, if you'd come forward, I'd like to give you a message, and then we'll let Senator Hicks go right now.
That's fine. Mr. President, I'm just going to say that games is such a harsh word.
Yeah. Senator Hicks, let me get your mic on.
Quick question on here, and it gets to the discussion, I think, from both the senators from Natrona County, but just so I can be clear in my mind for the JAC, so this budget is predicated on $47.50 a barrel of oil, and it's predicated on $3.50 natural gas as the average over the next 2 years. So we're already looking at the burn rate have exceeded that. So part of this question leads into the burn rate could actually be a lot higher than what we're looking at if we don't hit those targets. But what happens to this budget if we come in $400 million lower on our federal mineral royalties, if we don't have $47.50 oil over the biennium and we don't have $3.50? Is that going to result in additional diversions out of the LESRA account to be able to fund this? Because we could very well be looking at $300 to $400 million more than what we've profiled here to come out of the LESRA. And I just want to be clear. So what happens if oil over the next biennium is only $28, $30 and gas is $2.50? Where does that money come from to fund this budget?
Thank you, Mr. President. And everything you say is very true. And that's a concern that a lot of us have. And the reality of it is we'll have a supplemental budget, and the second half of the biennium is going to feel the pain. I mean, that's what's going to happen. And that's why, if you recall, when we had a situation where we're trying to ask the governor to come with 5% reductions. But that scenario, and the other thing I would mention, Mr. President, when Craig does that analysis on gas and oil prices, they bring into consideration volumes as well. And don't forget the volumes are going down, especially in gas, because we're not drilling any wells. Mr. President, there's 10 rigs presently drilling in Wyoming for oil and gas. That's the lowest number since before I was born, which is World War II. So those are real numbers to be concerned about.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, just to kind of add on to that, there's a couple things. Going back and talk about the burn rate a little bit, you know what you've got is you've got about $221 million coming out of the LSRA. We've talked about that number. We've also the other thing that you've got a budget reserve account or the statutory reserve account, excuse me, which is about $104 million. The governor always has to have that. The legislature doesn't necessarily have to have that appropriate to that, but we started to eat into that a little bit too. So the burn rate is a little bit accelerated based upon some of the actions that we've done. I'd also ask you to remember, again, we've talked about this a little bit, but there are some things that build up the LSRA. For example, we've talked about the 1.5%. If we have any kind of capital gains, anything over 2.5%, we'll start to refill the LSRA to some degree. So if the stock market turns around a little bit, you get a little build back there. Plus, some of the capital, if the SIPA account comes in, then that will also offload some burden off that. So that starts to flatten it out. If you also remember, and we'll get to this, Mr. President, when we get to the, if you remember, we did pass just to the good senator from Carbon County's concerns directly, the good majority of fluoridators sponsored an amendment that talks about further cuts. And you'll see when we get to that point in the bill and talk about that footnote about some of the measures that we're taking, because right now the Craig may have overprojected prices and quantity. And so ultimately you'll see when we get to the footnote that we talk about that we've got to steepen the penny plan, and you'll see we'll get to that as we go through the budget bill. But we're taking some measures to look at that and to start quickly to look at that, because it doesn't look good moving forward. So the point is that you'll see in the budget bill we've taken some steps to try and recognize that we need to continue to austerity measures and have increased austerity measures going forward potentially. But also that there are some mechanisms built into the budget and into statute already that will provide for some rebuilding of the LSRA. It's not just – there are some funds that go in there. It's not just a complete drain.
Thank you, Mr. President. Question two is, you know, we talked a lot about the original governor's recs on school foundation program, and then if we went with Craig estimates for the year 1920, there was a huge deficit of over $500 million, but with what the JAC did, we reduced that. So what is that total number now that we're looking at of being concerned about in 1920 for the school foundation program? It's about $330 million or something deficit.
I believe it was around $240 million. I'm looking for that. Be about $350 million in the hole.
Chairman, with or without forecasting earnings, investment earnings?
Without.
Without, okay. So perhaps we get the 6-year profile and then Senator Kinski.
Okay,
further discussions or questions of the budget on the goldenrod? If not, we're back to the conference committee report. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. So you'll have an 8.5 by 14 summary sheet that
summarizes the actions of your joint conference committee. You also will have the actual joint conference committee report, which will have language that goes with this summary sheet, should you wish to refer to it. But you'll see, if you looked at the 8.5 by 11 sheet, that you'll see the Senate amendments that we adopted, the House amendments, and then the amendments that we deleted from the Senate and the House, and then there's a number of delete and further amends. And then, of course, the language follows on the following pages, should you have any questions. But to begin the conference committee report, we will be working off of the summary report, the 8.5 by 14, and we, as a committee, have divided those pages up for you, and the first page will be handled, and I'll yield to Senator Hastert.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. And as you heard our good chairman of appropriations comment about the fact that we had a knockdown drag, I want you to have some war wounds here from that, and certainly defending the Senate and getting some of those guys off of the good chairman's back. But anyway, on the first page, you will see, as there again on the top of the page, there were four mirror amendments, identical amendments to the House and Senate budget bill that were automatically adopted, and they were the Homeland Security that defunds the Lifesaver program. We took the $4,427,000 from the Department of Health Director's Office that was that elderly and disabled tax, property tax, and then the $134,000 to the survey for the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, and then the $200,000 that we took from the Business Council over to Ag to be spent for education, to agriculture education to adults. And then on the first page, Mr. President, members of the Senate, that whole big section you see next, that whole big box, goes to a series of deleted and amended and deleted amendments to get to the bottom part of that where we adopted, we deleted and further amended and took House Third Reading Amendment Number 8 for health care financing. And we were at, I think, $2.8 million, and then the House was, but we only spent $400,000 of new money. So what we did there was we took $500,000 out of behavioral health. We only do still have the $400,000, reduced the Senate position, upgraded the House position to the $900,000, and with the $900,000 match of federal funds for the $1.8 million total for that. That's for the Medicaid waiver rebase, and added a footnote that you can see the language if you go to the other page on that deals with the actual language. But that was the amendment that we passed. We came to a compromise position with the House on that and passed that. And then the final one kind of ties into the top amendment that we adopted, the Senate third reading, S-303, which was the Von Flattern Amendment. We had split that, and the House had successfully passed both portions of it, where they had the $2.1 million in to the Department of Revenue for that program, and we compromised down on $1 million for that. So that's the first page, and if you have any questions, if not, we'll go on to the next page.
Second page. Senator Ross.
President, for pages 2 and 3, I'd yield to the Vice President.
Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What you see up there, the adoption of Senate Amendment, Third Reading Amendment 35, which is the puts the footnote on the directing DEQ not to expend funds to implement a state plan as a result of the EPA's carbon emission guidelines, the clean energy plan, and although it does permit the agency to remain involved, so that was adopted. We adopted House Second Reading Amendment Number 6, which added $100,000 of general fund back into the Conservation Corps program. Senate position had reduced that completely, and this refunds it at 50% of what it was funded at before. You see the adoption of House Second Reading Amendment 7 and Third Reading Amendment 23. Those are effectively, one of them was the first one, had to do with making $750,000 immediately effective for engineering and technical contracts. And this had to do with the capital construction and getting some of the capital construction work and some engineering contracts and stuff underway immediately. And then the other part of that also, it was one part of it was, if I remember right, was the expenditure. The other part was the funding and making sure that funding was available to move forward in that. And we dropped down to adopted House Amendment, Second Reading Amendment 28. Initially required, we didn't have a like amendment in the House, Mr. President, but what the House had was that they had required a member of the Geological Survey and a member of the Wyoming Business Council to attend the world's largest conference on mineral discoveries, exploration, and development. They wanted to do that. Of course, the Senate didn't have a corresponding thing. As we visited about that, we found out you can attend those in South Africa, or you can attend them in North America. And also, ultimately, we ended up with a modification. You can see there in the highlighted where we modified the footnote to indicate the attendance is required by the Wyoming Business Council and is permitted to us discretionary with the geologic survey, and also that it will only be once a biennium instead of once a year, and that it restricted it to a conference that was located in North America. The object there was that the House had was that there's lots of minerals in Wyoming. We've got rare earth minerals, we've got uranium, we've got soda ash, you've got lots of other things besides coal and other hydrocarbons, and so as to continue to expand that. So anyway, that's what was done there. Then you get down to House Reading, Third Reading Amendment 27. This had to do with the second year of that bounce pass as you go to the cost, where you start to have some cost to local governments participating in WildLink. We had the first year of the bounce pass. This body and there was a similar amendment on the other side, was to fund that through the second year so that there continue to be the bounce. I guess it's either a double bounce pass or a longer bounce pass now. Then we get down to Third Reading Amendment Number 7, which was deleted and further amend. We talked a little bit about this footnote in. As we discussed this before, we went back into Joint Conference Committee in our report. But what happened in this was that the House had an amendment that the governor continued to fly, agencies continued to fly, but the other four electeds were to fly at, I think it was 3,400 or $3,200 an hour. So anyway, we just modified it and it went there at 2,400, and we'll see what the Mr. President, we'll see what the governor does with that one if he gets his pen out and sharpens it on that one. The delete and further amended down below. This is the other kind of some more of that of the multiple faceted amendment we did where we took money out of a behavioral health and added into rebasing and did it for DD waivers. This is you see there on House Amendment, Third Reading Amendment Number 55. Also had that, and just it made some additional. And this one part had added the new Section 327 direct DD waiver rate rebasing sets parameters and specifies implementation of the DDB rebasing study that has to be done again by July 1st of 2017, and also made a couple of other technical corrections that were recommended by staff. See there that we deleted the Second Reading Amendment 42. We defeated that one in the House. That was in the Senate, where it added the footnote that would exempt reimbursement reductions for Medicaid providers that have provided Medicaid funds up to more than 50% of the revenue. We had defeated that amendment in the House, and we ultimately in the Commerce Committee, have that removed and deleted in the Commerce Committee report. Then we get to the last one on page two, which was Second Reading Amendment 33. Second Reading Amendment 33 in the Senate,
That was deleted and further amended. And what that was, we had a $954,000 ECA for preschool ECA. That was negotiated down at $675,000 of additional preschool ECA services. That was just a straight reduction there as part of the negotiation. Then turn over to the top of page three. We have second amendment number eight of the House amendment. That was public health nursing. That had deleted $724,000 of general fund for senior dental care. That one was adopted, reducing that program. In verifying that, we are still took the senior dental care to zero, but there is still dental care in there for children and some other people, others that are otherwise eligible. It was the senior dental care that was removed. Then we go down. The next box had to do with the number of carryover appropriations. House Second Reading Amendment 29. This next box has to do with and kind of the development of the multi-payer claims database, where you can have this information on medical care claims between various entities to try and help control costs. And there was a series of things that happened there. Ultimately, where it ended up is we deleted and further amended deleted those amendments, combined them into House Third Amendment number 11. So we adopt what we decreased the funding from 640 to 440 amount for $1,000 for the amount of funds to be allocated to the multi-claims payer database. That can either be done in-house at the Department of Labor or at that value if they can get that value cheaper privately. They're able to go privately, but that would be at a maximum rate of $220,000 a year. So it's most likely that that will not be able to be done in-house, and ultimately will create additional negotiating power with the private claims database provider. Then you get down to the deleted and further amend House Amendment, the Third Reading Amendment 54, First Division to that. That modified the footnote and directs the Title 25 Task Force to continue its study and work in cooperation with the Department to continue the work on the Title 25 issue that we've talked about several times during this session. The next box you see adopted House and deleted a number of items, and those were all number of technical corrections that just came from staff as it went through. And there's just those were listing a number of technical corrections as they came in and out, and some of those corrected. I think we'll cover most of those later when you see the other side of those corrections. But that's basically just a list of technical corrections. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. President. We are now on page four, and the first box on page four. Was the biggest sticking point between the House and the Senate, and it took us, essentially about 3 days to finally get it figured out. If you look at that box, we deleted all the House amendments, and the House kind of got into a frenzy on third reading and passed a series of...
He's on page five.
Oh, I'm on page five, sorry.
Page four?
Page five.
I'm on page four.
Page
four.
Oh,
there are birds.
Never mind.
Horse is ready to get out of the barn.
You know, that's just typical of Campbell County. I'm stomping all over poor Sheridan County, taking their minerals, taking their page.
Long way to ship that coal from Sheridan to Campbell County.
Mr. President, we're on page four, and I just want to remind the body that this is just to aid people in reviewing what we did in the budget. This 8.5 by 11, these are the actual amendments. So if there's something you have specific questions about, the footnotes go into detail here. So on page four, these are actually, for the most part, pretty straightforward amendments. I'm on page five. I can explain page five to you. Page four, where we start out with family services, and this was originally a House bill, a House amendment that we agreed to that provides $650,000 in TANF funds. Those are federal funds for high quality early childhood education grant program. And then House Bill 30 is again family services, and this was the I think we discuss this in the Senate. I can't remember for sure. But there's no money, no particular money involved in it, but it allows the residential treatment facilities to, on their per diem reimbursements, to not have to have a contract, and they can do, and they can bill by rules and regulation. The reason this is important is under federal law, if they pay by contract, there are a whole bunch of, frankly, unnecessary federal requirements that they have to meet, and it would cost them a fortune, and frankly, some of them would have to close. So this was actually just a common sense amendment that we readily agreed to. House Amendment, Second Reading Amendment 32, dealt with workforce services, and this completely deducted the $300,000 for the Hathaway Longitudinal and School Foundation Program of Wage Studies. And then the footnote that was deleted basically referred to it saying that it was one-time funding. It was found that we'd been doing that for years, and we didn't see much benefit from it. Senate Third Reading Amendment 5, that was something that we did. We put in $700,000 for the WIN loan and grant program. That's for nursing, and the House didn't have it at all, so we negotiated that down to $437,000.
I thought it was 375.
Or 375. House Third Reading Amendment 46. You can see there were some Senate amendments above that. This had to do with the money from the fire fund going to the bark beetle. We had $2 million. They had $1 million. We agreed to $1 million, but we added the Senate language stating that it had to be after the fire season, and it's $500,000 each year. The next amendment was House Second Reading Amendment 12, and then the next two after that. And, Mr. President, this was something we didn't have. They had $712,500 for eradication and control of noxious weeds, weed and pests on state land, and this is an issue throughout the state. So we came to an agreement, and we're paying $350,000 for that. And of that $350,000, up to $250,000 will be from the carryover from the $250,000 of the Colorado River litigation. Whatever is left over from that will go toward this. House Third Reading Amendment 18, University of Wyoming. We spent this is something they had that we didn't, spent $387,312 for the UW Master's Program in Counseling at Casper College, and adds a footnote. And frankly, I was originally against this, then I found out this is the only course in counseling in the entire state, and there is a need. House Second Reading Amendment 49, and then there was Senate Third Reading 15, had to do with state aid. And we had a discussion, apparently, as they did, dealing with the research aircraft that the university has. And this simply states that they have to have a financial plan in place before they can buy the plane, so we know how they will pay for it and how it will pay for itself. House Second Reading Amendment 16, University of Wyoming, a School of Energy, Energy Resources. All this amendment does is add joint minerals, business, and economic development to the recipients of the report in addition to JAC. And the same thing with the next amendment, House Third Reading 21, has to do with medical education. There is a reporting requirement that will also be sent to joint labor and health in addition to appropriations. And with that, I would turn you over to the tender mercies of the senator from Campbell County.
Senator Wasberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I would like to remind the good senator from Sheridan County that his football team did win the state championship this year, and they did play the Camels. So we are not always beating up on you guys. On page 5, we started through probably the biggest rhubarb in the differences between the House and the Senate. And so what happened was we essentially struck all three of the House amendments and the House agreed to the Senate position, which was essentially the Senate was not going to allow a change in the transportation component of the funding model on the last few minutes of third reading. And so essentially what happened was, if you remember the penny plan being implemented, it was to be 1% the first year, 2% the second year, and that was more to the Senate side. JCC modified the fiscal 2018 budget reduction from 2% to 1.4%, which added almost $8 million from the School Foundation Fund, and then revised the footnote number one accordingly. Of course, I know everybody knows that we'll be back down here in the general session before we go into fiscal year 2018. The next thing, JACC added a footnote number two directing the JAC and the JAC to review average daily membership counts to inform ECA discussion and for the department to report enrollment data to the JAC by January 1st. And essentially what's going on in our schools right now, school districts have estimated that they've had a drop of 900 students statewide. And if you were here in the early 90s, that was how we balanced our budget, because our school enrollment was dropping about 1,000 students per year. As you know, the funding model for education is driven by average daily membership, or ADM. And so a 900 student drop is about a $15 to $16 million drop in funding, depending upon what school you're at and how you want to figure that. So it is a concern to be addressed, but you need to remember that that is a soft landing. It's not a hard cut. It's a three-year rolling average, and so it will take time to go through that. Finally, on the bottom of the box, JCC added footnote number three, which directs the department to report to the JAC and the JAC on transportation funding. So we will have that. I know that the good senator from Campbell County's committee a few years ago looked into that very issue on transportation funding. And so we are now to the second box on page five, and we delete further and amend. What we did there was essentially fund the coordinator position on the State Board of Education for 1 year, and we're asking that the Joint Education Committee have a report on that, but also to address that issue in the interim as an interim study. That is not a part of that, but that is our hope. That money came from School Foundation Fund money. The next amendment, we adopted the House amendment, which decreased $212,519 general fund and one full-time position, and added a footnote to prevent general funds from being expended on anti-bullying efforts. The next box, we deleted House Amendment 2022. Essentially, we just struck it completely. The next one, House 3044, we adopted the House position, which reduced $50,357 general fund and added a footnote to specify that the K-3 reading assessment program expenditures for in-state and out-of-state travel shall not exceed $20,000. The next amendment, we deleted further amend, which was Senate 3022. And essentially that was a increase of $94,585, and that was actually the Wasserberger Co. amendment, where we put money back in for career technical education and Perkins funding to keep our maintenance of effort, and secured $8.4 million in career technical education funding. The next amendment is we deleted further and amend, which was Senate 3047. And essentially we struck the House amendment, and this is just a budget balancer. I believe they were at $35 million and we were at $40 million, and the difference we decided was to be $36 million from the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account. The next amendment, we adopted the House amendment, and that is House 3024, which is carryover appropriations, and it reappropriates remaining general fund up to $60,000 from the 2014 budget bill to the geologic survey for continued research on the rare earth minerals. And then we adopted the Senate position on Senate 2043, which exempts the judicial branch from the 100 series transfer restriction up to $400,000. And then finally, the last amendment, we adopted the Senate amendment, Senate 2015, major maintenance removes obsolete language requiring a five-year plan on our state parks. And so we are to our final page, page six.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. On page six, we adopted a Senate amendment, third reading amendment number 27, which is a revenue reduction issue. We removed a section and replaced it with a placeholder reserve to preserve the Section 300 references. In essence, what this does is it removes the $150 million LSRA transfer contingent upon Craig downward revision based on other things that we're doing. So there's not an automatic, the government can't automatically just hit into the LSRA up to the $150 million. With regards, we adopted Senate Third Reading Amendment number 28. This was the budget reduction transfer authority. Basically, what this did was just change the date. Per discussions with the governor, he needed additional time. We moved that back to July for him, and then 1 month later, report to Management Council in August. The next box we deleted and further amended, but this was the VBOT Nicholas Amendment with regards to budget planning. And we deleted that amendment, but then we came up with new language. And in essence, what we did is we phased this in. We continued the penny plan for further planning and reduction to our budget. So in, as you know right now, the penny plan is 1% the first year, 2% the second year. Now in 2019, it'd be 3.5%, and in 2020, 30% based on the 2017-18 general fund standard budget. 5%, excuse me. We're gonna really hit them. So it's requires the agency to submit the plans which reflect these reductions of 3.5 and 5% and exempts the judicial branch. The next box, we accepted the House Amendment 25. They actually had a little bit better language. They actually named the tribes, and we had, there was also a couple of technical corrections there. With regard to the House had an amendment which froze salary for various agencies and basically excluded the community colleges, K through 12, and University of Wyoming. And simply we accepted that, but we added the judicial branch to the list of exemptions. This one we might also see a pin at some point in time. And then the last one, school capital construction account, adds a new section requiring any remaining federally sequestered COLEs bonus payments to be deposited into the school capital construction account. And that is your Joint Conference Committee report. I urge you to vote aye.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I've got a question about one particular set of amendments. There was a requirement, as it left here, for the rebasing of the adult DD providers to be redone. Remember, considerable debate here as to that was not adequately done. I thought there was a similar one in the House. I heard some discussion during the presentation that that was being required, but I can't find it in the conference report. And so my question is there a requirement to redo that rebasing in there?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to that question, I think if you go to, I think it's on page 9 of the committee report, section 327, you've got A, B, and C there. That is, the Department of Health shall rebase adult dental disability providers' reimbursement using market-based compensation for personnel, and so forth. There's that one there, and that was my recollection, Mr. President. That was for the most part consistent with the House, with the House's similar amendment. The other one that I would point out, Mr. President, is we talked about a little bit earlier. It's on page 11, page 10 and 11. Where we talk about these further austerity measures. And so it's section 330. It's the budget reduction planning in there. We're talking about this where you see the continuing the penny plan. And then, but I wanted to point out to the body that on page 11, which is subsection C of that footnote, that in doing this, that we've required each agency's plan and prioritization shall be forwarded to the legislature with the governor's supplemental budget request for consideration of the 2017 general and 2018 budget sessions. And so when we're back here a year from now, Mr. President, doing our general session and the in a supplemental budget, noting down here that the last three lines are that what we're asking the agencies and the governor, we can't require them to do it, I don't think, necessarily. The governor gets to submit his budget, but we're asking him to plan and prioritize because to include any budget reductions commensurate with the most recent state revenue forecast released by the CREG. And so, again, they're recognizing that if things get worse, that when we come back here, we're wanting the agencies to look at this in the interim as we watch, particularly if the governor or someone else calls the CREG back for a meeting, which they may very well do this spring sometime, if they do that, to try and be ready and prepare when we come back so that as we've talked about earlier, just this afternoon, that it's not looking good right now, and so we need to be prepared to move forward.
Questions. Further questions, discussions? There being none. The motion is the Senate do adopt the Joint Conference Committee report, number one, to Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations, and you've been asked to vote aye. If the Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
No.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
No.
No. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Esquivel?
No.
No. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Johnson?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
No.
No. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Aye.
Aye. Rossus?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 22 aye, 8 no.
By your vote, you have adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report referencing Senate File number 1. You have
this majority floor leader read that order
of business of bills on committee on the whole.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself back into committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
Senator Burns.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Aye. Motion has been adopted. Now you can come forward.
I'd rather be up there by proclamation.
The Committee of the Whole will come back to order.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member of the Senate, I think we ought to give the staff and our Joint Appropriations Committee, or our Senate Appropriations Committee, a round of applause for their hard work.
I'll have to declare a conflict on that. Thank you very much. Okay. Now that the Committee of the Whole's back in order, the next bill up for consideration will be House Bill 114. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 114, Public Assistance Eligibility, an act relating to the Personal Opportunity with Employment Responsibilities Program, sponsored by Representative Connolly, was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 114 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I've been requested to present the bill. I'll do my best. Mr. Chairman, this relates to the POWER program, which is our basic cash grant welfare program replacement for the late and unlimited aid to families with dependent and children that certain senator's mother and I managed to get rid of here some 20 years ago now. Mr. Chairman, and this bill comes to us really at the request of the department. I'd like to start by just bring Senate up to date as to where we stand on this overall. We have been very successful in this program. When we started 20 years ago, our rolls were 5,600 cases. Some of them have more than one individual because you'd have mothers and children. But 5,600 cases on this in particular welfare program. We are down now, Mr. Chairman, well under 500. You could make a very good, and of those 500, the majority of them, as I recall the testimony in committee, are child-only cases where we're paying a relative, and it's not just any relative, but relatives and often ones that are somewhat impoverished themselves, take care of children. And there are a relatively small number. It's varied from 150 or so to 300. Varies up and down some. Adults that come onto this program, Mr. Chairman, usually because of some crisis in their lives. And our family service bureaucracy has done a very good job on taking those people in hand, saying, okay, we'll put you on the program, but we will teach you how to go get a job, we will do everything we can to help you, and we will get you off the program and self-sufficient. And, Mr. Chairman, they've done an excellent job on that. Witness the low rolls. You could make a very good statistical argument that our Department of Family Services is the best welfare department in these United States. And I think it is. We've led the way from all 50 states in terms of keeping these numbers down in the reduction we've had in our initial caseload and on getting people off the program and back to work. So, Mr. Chairman, when they come and say, as they did, we need some changes because it will help us get people back off, I tend to listen. What this bill does, on page 2, first, there's just what amounts to a technical correction. When the recipient's status changes in such a way that they can get out the program no longer eligible, they're supposed to immediately notify the department under current law. Question is, what does that mean? Defined it as not later than 10 calendar days after becoming aware. That's a reasonable administrative change, Mr. Chairman. Second, department shall allow exclusion of one duly registered licensed motor vehicle. It's gone with this to two motor vehicles with the Wyoming circumstance where a lot of the jobs can be in the backcountry where you need some kind of a backcountry capable motor vehicle to get to some of the work, where there's some real uses for that sort of thing. They change go away from the one and go to two is important, especially since we're eliminating the married couples shall be allowed a second duly registered. So it'll be just covered in this two, Mr. Chairman. So that change is, I think, worthwhile. And then on page 3, including allowance for motor vehicles specified, amount of assets an assistant unit may own goes from 2,500 to not greater than 5,000. They're trying to get people to build up while they're working and on the program some cash reserve and some other assets so they can handle the day-to-day emergencies and aren't forced back onto the welfare program. I would not favor this if this was a program where people were on long-term. But, Mr. Chairman, with the exception of the children, who may be trying to save something for college or something like that, with the exception of the children, this is not a long-term program. This is a short-term program, and people are trying to better themselves and get off it. And given that, I think this change makes a lot of sense. And given that it's recommended by a department that has the excellent track record, and I can't emphasize how good they are, especially compared to the rest of the world, this kind of excellent record, Mr. Chairman, I think it's a change that is overdue. I don't know how long that $2,500 has been there. It's probably been at least 20 years. I can't remember changing it since then, but it's been there a while. It does need to be changed, and it will help them in their efforts to get people off of welfare and back to work. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions on the bill.
Discussion on the bill. Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. Over on page 2, line 2, and then the second one is the 5-6 that was discussed by the chairman. What is the significance and what's the effect of changing resources, deleting that, and putting in assets? How does that look? I mean, the practical implications of that. The second issue is I'm a little concerned about this notion of 10 days after becoming aware. It does seem to me that if you're on public benefits, it's your job to become aware. And it seems like a pretty good big loophole to say, well, I just wasn't aware of the change or whatever, if you might explain that a little bit.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, the last one first. The 10 days, I think it was more a matter of convenience. They said, look, immediately, you get a job on Saturday. What's immediately mean? How soon does immediately mean? They just needed to define it, and they thought the 10 days was perfectly adequate. I think it's more a matter of convenience to the department and giving people a little time to get out and reply to it. Yeah, if you wanted to amend it to 5 days, that'd work too. But if you leave it immediately, what happens is that's not physically feasible, and so it becomes open-ended. So you need a time. And I don't think 10 days didn't strike the committee as being unreasonable. With regard to resources to assets, I'm not sure that change is of any significance. I think it may be just word of art as used within the department. It is important to understand that certain of those whether you call them resources or assets, certain of those are specified elsewhere and don't count against that 5,000 limit. You've got the two motor vehicles. That's the exception, Mr. Chairman. But also, you know, the clothing on their backs and some things like that that are set forth elsewhere. And I'm not clear whether it's in the statute or in the laws. Maybe the co-sponsor in the bill can help out on that. But I think it's just changing to a term of art that they're using currently.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. And I would just like to echo the comments that were made by the good chair of Labor Health Committee. The department asked for assets simply because that's one of their goals. They talk about, with the power program, asset building. And they consider that to be a step towards self-reliance by the people that are in this program. And I just wanted to clarify that just kind of falls in line with one of their goals. The other thing, and it's all I want to say to this bill, I'm extremely supportive of it for all of the reasons that the good chairman mentioned, but I would like to tell you their success rate. Approximately 31% of the power work program cases come off the program each year because they've been able to get jobs, they've been able to get their income levels well above what the minimum requirements are. So it's a program that really does work. It has a very high success rate, 31% in a year. So with that, I would stand for any further questions, or if not, urge your adoption of House Bill 114.
Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 114, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 114 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 81. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 81, Drug Court Surcharge, an act relating to court-supervised treatment. Sponsored by Representative Dayton. It's referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, and Von Flatern, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rights to report it, do so with favorable consideration of House Bill 81, Drug Court Surcharge. Representative Kraft will present the bill.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much. Both Representative and Senator Kraft will take a stab at this particular bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What House Bill 81 does is it establishes a drug treatment court fund that's real similar to the Victim Witness Fund. Information we receive from courts around the state, there are currently 19 treatment courts or drug courts, whichever you choose to call them, they're basically the same thing. There's 19 throughout the state, and we've discovered they work. The statistics we have received are that they're very successful in basically keeping people out of prison and out of jail and in the community and back kind of contributing. So we're happy with the success of the drug courts. They have been funded primarily with tobacco trust fund monies, which, as we know, are declining. So what this fund is trying to do is create just another little revenue stream for treatment courts. So what it basically says, if you just are kind of walking through the bill, what it basically says is, on page 2, it talks about this surcharge, which is, I cannot emphasize enough, totally and completely voluntary. A judge may do this. They may choose not to. They don't have to. If they choose to impose this surcharge, it cannot be above $50 for a defendant. So that's the maximum amount that can be imposed, and that can be imposed upon a defendant who pleads either guilty, no contest, or found guilty, or a deferred sentence on drug, alcohol, substance abuse-related issues. The court can waive the surcharge if then the person has good cause and presents good reason about why they're unable to pay. It provides the framework of when the surcharge will be paid, talks about what happens if there's a failure to comply, which is basically a contempt of court. And then on page 3, it talks about where the proceeds are going to go. So the proceeds from the surcharge go to the Department of Health to be expended in the court treatment program. So they're distributed to all the 19 treatment courts across the state. Talks about restitution as it can be a condition of parole if indeed the person is reasonably capable of making the payments. Talks about on page 4 how an inmate's earnings, if a person actually is in jail with this, can be deposited in the trust and agency account. How court restitution is made. So it basically just creates this drug court surcharge trust fund with the idea of providing that small revenue stream to the treatment courts who are doing such good work to make them more financially responsible, more financially stable, and moving towards that point where they actually can be self-sufficient in each of the communities in which they reside. With that explanation, I would stand for questions or ask for the question.
Further discussion, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, at some point, if it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it is a duck. And, you know, the framers of our Constitution said that the courts can collect fines, they can collect charges. There's certainly some right of the court to raise charges. For example, they put us a library fund, so when you pay your filing fee, then you pay another $15, it goes to a library fund for intended to supply a legal library for the county. And that question is whether they even have the right to do that. So we've tried to stay away from the beginning of our statehood from the idea that courts are going to raise the revenues for their programs through fines. And so what we have here is we have a program that was started by the use of tobacco funds. The funds are running out. If it was a great program, it ought to fight elbow to elbow to other programs. And then we say, well, since those funds are running out, judges, why don't you go out and we'll call it a surcharge instead of a fine. Now, if it was a fine, you know where the monies would go. It would go into the school foundation program account or into the school accounts. And we have always disassociated the judges with the role of raising revenues through these programs. And now we're saying, well, judge, if you choose to and if you really like these programs, go ahead and put a surcharge. I submit to you it's bad practice. It's not consistent with the way we began our statehood with the idea that four fines and forfeitures would go to specific places. I'd urge your caution on the bill.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we started a brand new program just not a couple of years ago that has a surcharge to the defendants. I think it's the defendants or somebody in the court system pays it for basically legal fees paid for the indigent. You know, so there's that one. There's one surcharge for the technology account for the Supreme Court. Frankly, I don't believe it should be optional, Mr. Chairman. I think that every defendant that's in that situation, they should just pay it. Don't put the judges in that position if we don't want them to put them in there. We can make it mandatory. Why shouldn't these people pay for their own treatment? Probably shouldn't come from the general fund or a surcharge. It's just that they should pay for 100% of their treatment, whether it costs $50 or $500. They're guilty parties. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wouldn't want to change or distinguish between these and filing fees that apply to everybody who uses the court systems. And we try to keep our filing fees down. The filing fees do go to the support, the actual cost of operating the courts. And in the instances of the indigency program, whether you agreed with it or disagreed on its formation, there was substantial evidence at the time that it would help in the provision of services by the courts throughout the state. And it was a filing fee that charged to all parties, whether you're civil or criminal. And the fee is out here. Now what we're talking about is a surcharge only to those that is not to everybody. It's just to those that are convicted. It is, in fact, a fine and a penalty.
Further discussion. Senator Von Fleter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the good senator. It is a fee to operate the courts. And in our county, those courts have been very successful. In fact, they've included alcohol as far as the recent treatment court. So I believe, as the good senator back here from Goshen County did, they should pay for their own treatment. And this is a way for them to pay for it. And it can be at the discretion of the judge, and he can put it on if they can afford to pay it. It's a very simple bill. It's a good way to make up for those tobacco monies we see going down, and I'm happy to see that myself because that means less people are smoking. But this is a great little bill, and I hope it moves forward.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the discussion. I do want to emphasize that the fund is very, very similar to what we have created for the Victim Witness Fund. It is indeed totally and completely optional and permissive, and it does allow for our individual treatment courts that have experienced success in our own communities to continue their operations and continue to move forward. That's all I really want to say, and I would urge support of the bill. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the bill? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 81, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 81 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 140. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 140, Attorney at Law Amendments, an act relating to professions and occupations, sponsored by Representative Brown, was referred to Committee No. 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, Kinski, and Von Fleteren, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 140, Attorneys at Law Amendments. President Nicholas will present.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that returns some of the supervision for the State Board of Law Examiners directly to the Supreme Court. Folks, in Wyoming, we have what's described as an integrated bar. That is that you have some bar associations that are disintegrated. they're separate functions. So, for example, if you're in Colorado or other places, Colorado's a good example, they have a bar association which you're free to join. And then the Supreme Court regulates lawyers by themselves. In Wyoming, they've integrated those services so that the bar association and the supervision are combined and under the regulation of the Supreme Court. In this instance, we've historically provided for the statutory collection of the fees for the State Board of Law Examiners, and what this does is return that exercise back to the Supreme Court. So you see over on the bottom of page 2 that it's the compensation reimbursement is to be set by the Supreme Court. I'm generally one that does not support getting rid of the fee setting from the legislature. I think that's kind of what we do and we should be doing. But in this instance, the argument is made that the Supreme Court is, in fact, the regulatory body Over on page 3, we provide that they will collect the interest and fees from the court, will provide the interest and fees for the examination, and that they'll deposit that money with the state treasurer, and the fund and the interest on the funds are continuously appropriated back to the Supreme Court for that purpose. Once again, you can recall that I generally do not like the continuous appropriations, but in this instance, it's to the Supreme Court. The monies they collect is for a specific purpose from people taking the bar exam, and the limit of their funds is to go back and operate in the bar examination program. So they do not have the resources to expand or to enlarge the program. So in this instance, it seems like an appropriate continuous appropriation. I'd urge your support of the bill.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 140, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 140 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 29. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 29, Revisers Bill, an act relating to revision of inadvertent errors, sponsored by the Management Council. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Perkins, and Rothfuss. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Mr. President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation with respect to House Bill 29, the Revisers Bill. Folks, what this bill does is a collection of statutes that the staff or people work that staff find throughout the years where there are errors in statutes or codes or things that are later determined to be inappropriate, where you do a recodification, for example, and there are just some mistakes. So what you see here is a collection of changes to existing statute to conform to what their original intent is, and it's not my intention to go through every one. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment. If the reading clerk would please read in the amendment.
House Bill Number 29, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 9.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 29, and this is another instance where and often what happens, folks, is that attorneys who are working with the statutes, when they see there is an error, they contact their legislators, who contact the LSO and give them advice. And this is an area where the statute, Reviver of Dormant Judgments, was referring to a 1940s case or a statute that had been repealed. And the mechanics of trying to revive your dormant judgments was difficult. And this conforms the statute by, instead of referring to language, the old language was reviving these actions before judgment by action. That language came from a statute that was repealed many years ago. And what this does is explain that the process should be without the existence of the repealed statute. So it's a correction to make the statute work. I'll stand for questions if anybody would like.
We're on the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment?
Question on the amendment.
Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 29, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 29 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All I wanted to point out was that I was supposed to be the floor sponsor of this bill. I went to all the trouble of getting it out of my drawer, and then the president took over and just wasted all my damn time.
Well, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, I'm sorry if you'll be sore in the morning. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I have a question at the bottom of page 4, top of page 5. It appears that we're crossing out WS 2224304C and replacing it with 2224304C. And am I missing something, or is there a further error here?
Sounds like a Rothfuss question.
Mr. Chairman, seriously, I think the there may be an intention to fix something here that didn't get fixed because they just copied what they had.
I wonder if it's the comma.
Does anyone want to address the good senator's question?
Mr. Chairman, I will check on that, but I suspect it may be the addition of the comma.
Well, I think it was tended to. I think it's
any further discussion on the bill?
Comma.
Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with favorable recommendation of House Bill 29, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 29 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 53. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 53, Special Districts Task Force, an act relating to the administration of government, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, which we returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, and Pappas. No, Senator Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 53, Special Districts Task Force. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask it be read in.
House Bill 53, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 15.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 53 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to yield to Senator Hicks for a discussion of the bill and of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, this is a bill that was worked through the interim by the Joint Corporations Elections and Political Subdivision Committee. Need to give you a little history on this. This bill specifically deals with establishing a task force for special districts. 20 years ago, there was a similar task force form, and the purpose of that task force was try to find some commonalities to address those issues with elections, reporting, formation, dissolution, and a number of issues where you find that the special district statutes are competing or non-consistent. So what this bill does is go in and establishes a task force. Before I get too far along in this, I'd like the members of the body, if you look up on your tray, you should have a handout in here, and I'm going to reference this a couple of times as we get into the bill. But what this does, and I should say further, there was some legislation last year that would have forced every special district in the state to go back on the ballot. And that generated quite a bit of concern with the county clerks from a standpoint of just putting 650 special districts back on the ballot every 2 years or every 4 years as the case may occur. So we took a lot of testimony in the interim, particularly from the clerks, but also from the elections divisions within state government trying to grapple with this issue. And the conclusion after taking this up at three different committee meetings and stuff was probably to go back and look at what they did 20 years ago on that task force. They did simplify some of the stuff for special districts. There's more special districts now than there was then. So what this does is just establish a task force. It'll be two members from the Senate, two members from the House, one representative of the Secretary of State's office, one from the county commissioners, one from the county clerks, and then a representative of special districts. Basically, if you go to these handouts I give you, here's one of the issues that we're grappling with is there's 650 special districts depending on how the outcome of this legislation or this session, there could be 652. We've passed legislation to establish a couple additional special districts, at least on this side. We don't know the final outcome of that yet. But the point being is the special districts are going up. What we want to do is look at how can we bring some uniformity into some of these issues that we're grappling with. Well, one of the things I want you to do is if you go to the handout, if you go to the second pages, this is just an example of a few of the special districts that the county clerks have said to give you an idea of some of the issues that they're grappling with. So if you look at that, if you just go under authorized voters, one of the districts says the principal acts silent. We don't know for sure who he even qualifies as an authorized voter. Another special district that's not defined in the principal act is who is a qualified electorate. In other places, the principal act is silent. We go all the way down through the list, and you're going to see a list of special districts that there's absolutely no uniformity in the elections code side of the formation and voting. That's one of the issues that the clerks have identified that they would like the task force to take up to try to bring some uniformity into the election side. Formations, the same thing. You find that across the board, sometimes they require 25% of the landowners owning 25% of the assessed valuation. Other times, it's just individuals within an individual district. So the issues are pretty broad. And the idea that there's 650 of these out here, what the clerks would like to do is, with some assistance through the task forces, come back and try to establish some uniformity. So, members of the body, that's pretty much what the bill does. What I'd like to do is I believe the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been moved. What I'd like to do is speak to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. So what Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 does is said there was only one representative from a special district on this task force. There's 650 special districts in the state of Wyoming. Now, we had testimony that is if we're going to try to broaden that out to get some representation of special districts, what would be the best way to do that? And it was suggested that we look at how the elections go for those special districts. So some special districts go on the general ballot in any election, and every qualified voter gets to vote from them. Some special elections, it's only those people within that special district, might be an improvement district, only the individuals within that. And then you have special districts that are appointed by the Board of County Commissioners. So what the amendment does is it says we're going to broaden this out. We're going to include one member from each one of those to be appointed by the governor. So you'll have three members from special districts, but they'll represent different entities. Now, the handouts kind of show you the justification in my mind as to why this is needed. So if you look at that first page, it'll show you. We've got special districts in Wyoming that range from one hospital district, $80 million. And then if you go over to another county up in the northeast side of the state, they got a special district up there that deals with the improvement district. Their total revenues is $720. In fact, I will tell you the range on these special districts within the state of Wyoming. So if we look at the county level, at the lowest level in the county, there's $6 million of revenue assessed through these special districts. That's the lowest. On the high end, it's $212 million is being assessed through these special districts and running through those special districts. On the individual level, we see $742 as the very smallest. $173 million is one district in the state of Wyoming. That's their annual revenues. So I would tell you that having one individual on that task force trying to represent 650 people with budgets that range from $700 to $173 million is probably not adequate representation, especially when you look in the light that we're putting two on the Senate. There's 30 of us, but we've got two members, two on the House for 60. There's 23 counties. There's one representative for the county commissioners. I think this amendment's a good amendment. With that, members of the body, I'd ask for your favorable consideration of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File or House Bill 53. And ask for your favorable consideration as a yes vote.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of, I'm sorry, who moved the amendment? Was it Senator Case or, I'm sorry, I apologize. All those in favor, Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 53, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 53 has passed Committee of the Whole. No, we have a Committee of the Whole. I'm sorry, we have a second Standing Committee Amendment. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 53 and ask that it be read in. How about that?
House Bill 53, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to engrossed copy, page 5, line 22.
I'll turn it over to the smooth Senator Ross.
Yeah, they're gliding in everywhere now. Mr. Chairman, now that you approved Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, which added two more people, this is one of the few times I see me roll over in my grave as Chairman of Appropriations and add money. But in order to accommodate these additional people, we increased the budget by $4,000 up to $30,000. I urge your favorable consideration.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 53, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 53 has passed. Committee of the Whole, we're back on the bill.
Question.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, the magnitude of this undertaking is enormous. And I'll tell you what you don't have represented in here. You don't have any industry represented. You don't have any taxpayers represented. And these statutes underlying them are massively complicated. These are where one statute parties litigate over months and months over. And if you just look at the first list of the on the Albany County folks on if you were to go through, if you knew those districts, half a dozen of those include industrial firms, they include commercial firms who have no voter participation, who may have gotten included in the district years and years ago. And part of the balance that we've always had when we've gone out and looked at these special districts is to create task force that include folks that are actually paying the tax. And when I look at this list, I don't see any taxpayers on the list that would be affected by just one word massively affecting the changes. Do I think the statute's a mess? You bet I do. Do I think this committee will do it, this task force? No, I don't think it has the expertise or the time from what you've described to straighten this mess out.
Further discussion. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I would call your attention to page...
Mr. Chairman, I'd call your attention to page 2, line 18. It says one representative of the Wyoming taxpayers appointed by the governor. So it is trying to streak that balance and have that representation on the task force.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, we're all taxpayers. We're talking about special taxpayers who pay enormous fees along the UP. You've got the UP itself. You've got coal mines, you've got Trona mines, you've got many facilities that have found themselves inside special districts. And, folks, this is a big undertaking with lots of intricacies. And the special districts and the way we've created the merger between these various districts may not have been done correctly. But I'd submit that you need a gaggle of attorneys to figure it out, and you don't have the full gaggle here to get it done.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to address some of those concerns, this task force isn't going to solve all those issues. It's a first step. You know, when you eat elephants, you eat them one bite at a time, and this is the first bite at the elephant. So the idea that we need a gaggle of attorneys maybe during hunting season and a season on them, I don't know. But I think right now these are going to be public meetings. One of the issues that's been brought up is to look at the election side. And a lot of this in the interim work was driven from the election sides based on some potential legislation last year that passed one body, didn't get out of this body. But the idea that the clerks have some issues, I think, is a legitimate issue. We're not going to solve all these issues. They are public meetings, and those taxpayers in those areas are going to have plenty of opportunity to participate. This committee, this task force is just going to make recommendations. They're not passing laws. They're not assessing more money or taxes to any special districts. One bite at a time, folks. I'd ask you to vote yes.
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just point out that this is the first reading of this bill. We have opportunities to change the membership to add gaggles or giggles or beagles if we'd like. But it really is, by all accounts, something that we need to begin to address. And it hasn't been done in a very long time. I actually had the opportunity to serve on it last time. And I do need to correct that it wasn't a task force last time. We did it with the legislative subcommittee. But that was a very long time ago. We had excellent staff. In fact, the director of our LSO staffed that subcommittee at that time. And, you know, it was an immense undertaking. This is possibly a better approach. We have to begin somewhere. We just kind of keep kicking it down the can. And as we can down the road, and as we do, we add special districts each time. Two more this session, so we better do something.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, our president does bring out a good point. We've got probably in my home county a tenth of these special districts in the state. We've got close to 50. I think it's over 50, closer to 60 special districts in a county of 12,000 people. But in one of those districts, in one of those areas, 90% of the valuation of that district is paid by a large corporation, oil producer up there. And they don't vote. They don't vote. But they should be involved in this discussion. And I would suggest, and I'll go to work on trying to include them in these this task force, because they should have some voice during this process. This is an important bill. It does need to be looked at, and I think, as the good senator has recommended, we take a chunk out at a time and a bite out at a time, but they should be represented on this task force, but on and for the bill.
Further discussion on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 53, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 53 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
We're at that order of business of reading and signing enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act number 19.
Senate Enrolled Act 19, formerly being Senate File 1, an act to make appropriations for the biennium commencing July 1, 2016 and ending June 30, 2018.
I'm about ready to sign Enrolled Act number 19, a Senate Enrolled Act, which was original Senate File number 1. I have so signed. There it is, the budget. Ladies and gentlemen, we alternate on these mirror bowls. We alternate, so the next time will be a House bill and House Enrolled Act, and then this year happens to be ours, so it's a Senate Enrolled Act. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that brings us back to the bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the House or the Senate resolve itself back in the committee of the whole discuss bills on general file.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Burns. That motion was adopted.
Mm-hmm. Senator Enrolled Act.
Yeah.
asked for.
Burns is gone.
Yes, I would.
Yeah, that's a monumental job. You don't have to run for re-election.
Committee of the Whole will come back to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 118. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 118, Foster Care and Permanency Additional Requirements, an act relating to children, sponsored by Representative Throne, was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 118 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I yield to Senator Kraft for an explanation of this good little House bill.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 118 is another one brought by Department of Family Services addressing foster care and permanency issues. There's a little handout in your box that looks like this. It's just a little half page, and the bill itself looks really cumbersome because the same two changes were made throughout the bill. So the little half page cheat sheet just tells you exactly what we're doing with this, and we're doing it basically to specify a couple of standards, and they're required by federal law amendments. So there is federal funding at stake in this, as well as just looking at some additional things for foster care. So the first section basically establishes something called the reasonable and prudent parent standard. And what it basically says is if you are a foster parent, if you have children in foster care, you can sign permission slips for normal childhood activities. You can't sign for major surgery or anything like that, but you can sign for a field trip, or if the kid can go to a birthday party, some simple little things like that. I know I spent an awfully lot of years in another life as a school counselor, and that was a huge issue we had, was kids would be going on a field trip of some sort, and there were always kids in foster care that didn't get to go because we couldn't track down their DFS caseworker, who was the only one who could give permission for Johnny to go on the class picnic with the rest of the class. So this would allow for that foster parent to send a note, just like all the other parents, saying, yes, this can happen. It creates a standard for what they have to follow when they're making these decisions. It absolutely doesn't conflict with or override any parental rights, any court orders, any DFS case plans. This just allows for, it's really simplifying things and allowing for foster parents to do, as the section says, reasonable and prudent parenting decisions. The second section is another big long one. It's called Another Planned Permanent Living Arrangement. And that basically addresses children who are 16 years or older. Right now, we always talk about parental reunification as kind of a primary option. That's supposed to be the number one goal. This says that when you get kids that are 16 years and older, that might not be the most viable plan for them. The most viable plan might be helping them move towards independence, move towards emancipation. So this basically ensures that the permanency plan, the reunification plan, is used only when it's appropriate, and that a child who is 16 years of age or older can participate in that decision, can inform the judge what they would like to do. Of course, the Department of Family Services does have to ensure that youth is able to participate age developmentally appropriately. So it does have some requirements on that, but it basically just allows for other options for some of those older children who are 16 and above. That's the bill in a nutshell. I would stand for any questions or ask for the question.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, in committee, it did become clear that this is a federal requirement. It's not one we have to do right away, but because essentially what this is an outbreak of common sense on the part of the feds, the real question was why did it take them so long, and we ought to get this done because it will make life a lot better for a lot of those kids in foster care. Just imagine what it must be like to be one of them that has to be left behind, is singled out from their friends, has to be left behind because you can't find the caseworker and their foster parents aren't allowed to make the decision. This is good common sense, Mr. Chairman. I would urge the Senate to adopt it.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 118, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate, House Bill 118 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 97. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 97, Wolf Depredation Compensation, an act relating to agriculture, sponsored by Representative Winters, was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senator Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Geist, Senator Emmerich, acting chair, was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises reported, do so with favorable consideration of House Bill 97, Wolf Depredation Compensation. And for a discussion of this fine little bill, I would like to turn the mic over to that fine senator from Sheridan, not yourself.
Senator, not yourself? I'm sorry, Senator Kinski.
I think you meant to say that finer senator from Sheridan. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have a standing committee amendment and a committee of the whole amendment, so I'd like to start by moving standing committee amendment number one. And just
ask that it be read in, please.
Oh. House Bill number 97, Standing Committee Amendment number 1, to engrossed copy, page 1, line 5.
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this amendment does is change the source of the funding for the program contemplated in the bill, and I will tell you I'm somewhat indifferent to its fate because the immediately following Committee of the Whole amendment just strips the funding from the bill and leaves rulemaking authority. So rather than belabor the bill, I'll simply ask for a vote on Standing Committee Amendment 1 and proceed to Committee of the Whole Amendment 2 to strip the funding back out.
We're on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 97. Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, as I read this bill and as I read this amendment, it could result, as if the wolves spread to our part of the state, our cattle are loose on the range, confined in various fenced pastures. The historical record is quite clear. A wolf looks at a cow as a buffalo that's easy to catch and figures that out pretty quickly. So we would have depredation and claims, and I would declare a conflict of interest on this amendment and on this bill.
Conflict noted. Senator Perkins.
I don't have a conflict, Mr. Chairman, but just by explanation of this, your Appropriations Committee wasn't really willing to appropriate the $200,000 for a new request for a new program. In listening to the situation, what we had, there's also some issues with respect to having it not be in one Department of Agriculture because there's some limitations and some inabilities to pay out of that. And so they moved it over. And so the program, if this bill were to pass, would be housed under the Predator Management Board. And under the Predator Management Board, there is a there has been. There was originally $6.6 million that came in grants and other forms that went out for various local predator management control boards, mostly for killing coyotes. But nevertheless, that was in there. Your Joint Appropriations Committee had taken that, taken a nick out of that to the tune of $1.5 million to get where, and that's the budget we've just passed today. So that leaves $5.1 million in that fund. And so what this did, it'd say if it was worth it to have predation and worth it to have your, what we did is we took another nick and said you could spend it. And that's where the Predator Management Control Board and that division of the Department of Agriculture could expend up to $100,000 of those funds for this predation. And so it would not be a new appropriation, but simply allow the Predator Management Control Board, where this program, if this bill passes, would be housed, to pay up to that amount. There is money appropriated in game and fish for wolf predation, but according to testimony we had, that is pretty much used up with what their anticipated revenues are. But anyway, that's the explanation behind this, behind the Standing Committee Amendment number one. And so, quite frankly, if you think that's an appropriate use of those predator management control boards to take up to $100,000 of that $5.1 million and use it for this purpose, then you should vote aye. If you don't, then you should vote no.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Rothfuss, could you come up to the chair, please?
Discussion on the amendment, sensing some thoughts from Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just a further explanation from what the Vice President said. There are predator funds that are in game and fish. This goes back to when wolves were taken off the endangered species list. Those funds are for predation inside what was the trophy area. That is a program that we expect to continue once wolves are again off the endangered species list. And when you have predation in an area like that, they can't always go out and kill the wolf. With the wolf off the list, in the predator areas, you can kill a wolf on site. So frankly, this program wasn't needed. Once the wolf was put back on the endangered species list, you get a wolf and you get depredation, you're not allowed to go kill that wolf. So that's why this program came in. My understanding is, the thinking is that once the wolves come back off the list, this program will end. That's why the Appropriations Committee put this into the predator management program and, frankly, didn't put a lot of money into it because not a lot of wolves right now wander out of the trophy area.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 97. Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Probably a little further explanation. It appears that we're taking money out of an animal damage fund that's for taking care of predator problems and now turn it into a compensation program. And it's really what the fund was never set up to do. We cut it in half, I think, through appropriations to start with. And now we're raiding the fund to pay for damages, not for what the fund was intended for. The fund's always been intended for to help control predators. And I think we're doing a disservice from a number of ways to do this.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I appreciate those are all wonderful explanations of where we are on the bill. And to leverage off the fine Senator from Devil's Towers explanation, this is a fund that's intended for control rather than for compensation. And agricultural groups are very concerned, particularly given the amount of the reduction in the appropriation, that it not be repurposed for compensation. That's point number one. And I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit. But it's also very complicated in terms of putting this rulemaking together. So the desire is to remove the funding but keep in place the rulemaking authority so that if the wolf remains listed, and if there is funding available for compensation, the program will already be in place. So on and against the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to correct something, I misspoke here, and I've been corrected back here, and so I want to correct that. And also just to clarify that there hasn't been it wasn't cut in half. The fund previously that this amendment affects was 6.6 million. It's now 5.1 million. It took a 23% cut. It didn't take a 50% cut. The other thing was that if you vote against this amendment, where you would be at is that the bill has a $200,000 of just general funds, so it's additional spending. There would be $200,000 of additional spending if you were to not vote in favor of the Standing Committee number one. If you vote in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number one, there is not additional money, but there is part of this. There is up to $100,000 out of this $5.1 million fund that could be used for this purpose. So I think hopefully that clears a vote. An aye vote would say that it should come out of this predator management fund. A no vote would say it would increase spending, overall spending on the budget for the total expenditure for the year by $200,000.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. First, I'll stand corrected on the cut. I was wrong on it. 25% is right. I do think it's really wrong for us to go down a path to start taking these funds out of accounts that they weren't set up for. We can do another change down the road. This is merely the start of the path. We can do another amendment. But to go raid another fund for an unintended purpose of it is merely the start of going down that path that we all start looking at other funds and say, well, doesn't really matter what it was for. Let's go ahead and take something out of this fund and use it for what it was not intended for. And I think this body's been really good about trying to make sure when we appropriate money that it's spent in the right place. Let's do the right thing and go ahead and get this knocked down.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Kinski's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 97, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 97 has died. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole amendment.
House Bill 97, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, delete the, then page 1, line 5.
You've heard the reading of the amendment. What's your pleasure, Senator Kinski?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would move Standing Committee of the Whole, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 97. What this does, the net effect of this, is it deletes all funding for the program and leaves in place in the bill just the rulemaking authority to put together a damage compensation program for the WOOF. Were the decision of that D.C. court to relist the court be of a much more prolonged duration than we would hope, I would urge a favorable consideration of the bill, of the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Kinski's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 97, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 97 has passed. Committee of the Whole, we're back on the bill. Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. With regard to House Bill 97, I don't know that I can say more than's already been said. I think it's been a very thorough discussion. What we're left with here is a bill without an appropriation, but an authorization for the department to go through the rulemaking process. And that process itself part of the reason to strip the funding out is that process of putting that rulemaking together becomes rather complicated in the sense, as one of my colleagues referred to, there become questions as to what is the appropriate agency and what impact, if any, might this have upon the litigation. And job number one is we do not want to interfere with the D.C. litigation. So what we're asking here for is just a rulemaking authority with the assurance that all this will be done
in collaboration with the Attorney General's office and all affected parties, and if there's even the hint that it may jeopardize getting the WOOF delisted, that it won't go forward. Otherwise, we'll have something in place for compensation if funding becomes available and if the relisting is of a much longer duration than we'd like. Urge favorable consideration of HB 97. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 97, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 97 has passed Committee of the Whole. The last bill up for consideration is House Bill 17. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 17, Collection of Antlers and Horns, an act relating to game and fish, sponsored by Representative Barlow, was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Kraft, and Johnson. Noes, Senators Barnard and Cooper. Senator Cooper, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Cooper?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a recommendation that House Bill 17, Collection of Antlers and Horns, do pass. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment number one, and I'd like to have that read in at this time, but we want to act on it a little later, but I'd like to have it read in.
House Bill 17, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 2, line 17.
Mr. Chairman, for an explanation of the bill, I'd like to yield to Senator Boner.
Senator Boner.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you can see, this bill will go into the statutes that govern our game and fish and expand their authority where they can confiscate any sort of result of somebody hunting or fishing on private land without permission. We're expanding that authority so they can go ahead and confiscate antlers and horns in a similar manner. So the impetus behind this bill is that picking up these antlers and horns is becoming increasingly profitable. It's becoming more and more of an incentive to trespass on a private land to get these horns and antlers. And frankly, the value is increasing to such a point that the deterrent for the criminal trespass just simply isn't sufficient to prevent this sort of behavior. So that's what this bill seeks to do, is simply expand the game and fish's authority to remove that incentive to trespass in order to collect these antlers and horns. You'll see that there were a few amendments in the House. Most notably, they added the language on page 2, lines 19 through 22, specifying that those confiscated antlers or horns would be first offered to the landowner in question. So that's the bill. It's fairly straightforward. The Standing Committee Amendment, if we'll talk about that, you'll see that we want to make sure that the individual would have to be convicted of trespassing in order for this to apply. As you may well be aware, this can be a sensitive issue. We don't want just to confiscate somebody's antlers without due process. So we make sure that due process does in fact take place. Also, we updated the committee updated the effective date to be effective immediately. So with that in mind, I'll take questions on the Standing Committee Amendment first.
Senator Boner, would you move the Standing Committee Amendment, please? Oh,
my apologies, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move a Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 17 and ask for the body's favorable consideration.
Discussion on Standing Committee Amendment number 1.
Question.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, in this bill, we were worried about lawfully and unlawfully, and you see there on line 14, it's unlawfully taken, which that means they were trespassing on the property, and then we put that upon conviction in to make sure we didn't get ahead of ourselves and dispose of the antlers before the person was convicted. So I think that really cleaned up that House amendment and made it into a good bill. Thank you. I'd recommend passing the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Any further discussion on Standing Committee Number 1? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Boehner's motion to adopt the Standing Committee, to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 17 has passed Committee of the Whole. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole amendment?
House Bill 17, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 20.
Senator Hicks.
Chairman, members of the body, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 17. This just goes into page 2, line 20, and clarifies that when there is a sale of these horns that where you provide those back, that it's to the private property owner. There is potential where you could have an unlawful collection on federal lands. We certainly don't want the department offering these back to the BLM or the Forest Service under those circumstances. So it just specifies that they'd offer them back to the private property. Ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Hicks' motion to adopt standing to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 17 has passed Committee of the Whole. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question either for the committee that heard this or for any of the attorneys in the body. These antlers, and I do find them routinely. I pitched one just last weekend out of a field just so it wouldn't be bust the teeth on the swather. They are getting increasingly valuable. Question is, under existing law, you have a discarded antler sitting in the middle of a privately owned field. Nobody's found it yet. Whose property is it? Is somebody that just comes in trespassing and removes it? Are they committing, I think they're misdemeanor levels given the values, but they're getting to be more and more significant values. Whose property is that antler just sitting there unfound?
Mr. President.
Chairman, I think that's a great research article, and I think you could actually have the same article with respect to fecal matter left by animals as they're traveling through once it's dropped on your property, whose it belongs to. I suspect it's yours at that time as part of your soil. And, you know, folks, in all seriousness, the problems with folks trespassing and for all of us or those of you that have family ranches have grown accustomed to the difficulty of controlling your properties and for example, if you're in the business of guiding folks or allowing people or even just allowing your family members to go on your ranch to hunt. It's not very pleasant to have a whole bunch of people trespassing on your property and taking wildlife on your ranch. But we've always said that that's the wildlife belongs to the state. Trespassing is your remedy, and that's how you control your gates and your fences. And all of a sudden, now what we're doing is you have to talk about what do you use a criminal statute for. Crimes are crimes against the state. They're not crimes against the individual. And if you look over on page 2, we say no person shall enter the private property of any person to hunt, fish, or trap. And the reason we reach out to those areas is because the wildlife belong to the state of Wyoming. And we say that those laws extend to our wildlife because even though they may move across your property, those are crimes against the state. The collection of antlers goes right back to that question. Who did the nobody's abandoned them. I don't think that the elk abandoned them. I think they just didn't need them anymore, or the deer. We're talking about elk sheds. They just decided they didn't need them anymore. They didn't really abandon them. It doesn't really apply. And I suspect that there's a good argument to be made that once they're shed on a property, they become
abandoned by the state of Wyoming. Certainly the state has no ownership over them at that point. And it's up to the private folks to go out, and if they think it's to damage them, that's their remedy. But now what you're doing is taking this criminal statute and creating a crime against an individual person. And that's not what criminal laws are for. Criminals were there to punish those of the crimes against the public and not against individuals. And then when you come down and say, now as part of this criminal remedy, we're going to create a private remedy in a criminal bill, that's not an appropriate use of criminal statutes. Criminal statutes are for crimes, and the crimes are against the state. And if folks have a problem with taking of animals without permission on their property, that's a trespass. That's the way you enforce it. And I don't think it's any less valuable that you lost a couple sheds than if you have a big bull elk that you fed all winter and you had in your mind that your child or your friends were going to come take that, or maybe you've got hunters paying you to come take it. What's the difference? Those have been problems that exist forever, and there's nothing particularly unusual about sheds. I suspect that they probably belong to the owner once that they're abandoned on the property, and that's the owner's remedy to enforce it. But it's not the business of the state to go out and to create a private remedy and become the policeman for every individual.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's why I asked who owns it there, sitting there in the field. If it's the landowner's property, why is it different from a hay bale that's sitting there? That's my property. And people will sometimes come on, trespass, and steal those. And the remedy is it's a misdemeanor, unless they steal enough of them. That'd be quite a project, steal enough of just the little hay bales. Might not be such a project with the bigger ones. Mr. Chairman, I think, and you can see an analogy, somebody comes on, breaks into a house to steal something. Same thing, they're coming on illegally. Well, we all think that's criminal. If that antler is private property and it's becoming valuable, and that's what's driving the trespass, I think maybe use of a criminal law is appropriate, because I think you got the analogy to somebody who's coming on to steal something else that's there, or somebody actually who's committing a burglary. So I think it does make a difference, and that's something we need to think about, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I think criminal law is a little bit more than just crimes against the state. There's all kinds of crimes against people, crimes for property. So, you know, to say that this isn't crimes against the state, I guess from the standpoint of maybe game and fish regulations, but, yeah, it's definitely a crime. You're going to have crimes against individuals.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I was one of the no votes in the committee on this, so I might as well speak to it. One of the things is we looked at this law during the interim as an interim topic in the travel committee quite extensively. And in the end analysis was the committee decided that we just couldn't make the law work as some folks would like it to work, and so we rejected it and didn't bring it forth. So this is kind of a law of similar to that. But another thing, too, I'd like to mention that, and as you know, I'm not an attorney. It's pretty obvious, right? But in Title VI, it talks about trespassing in our laws. And what this does, this lowers considerably the responsibility that someone has who wants to accuse someone of trespassing on their property. There's all kinds of things that Title VI goes through that you have to do in order to say that someone is trespassing. So that was one of the issues that was dealt with in the interim. Another thing was, is that there was, and there is, rather, I should say, an attorney general's opinion that was done in, I believe, 2003, yeah, 2003, that specifically states that does the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission have statutory authority under Title 33 of the Wyoming Statutes to promulgate rules and regulations that fix seasons, open, shorten, or close seasons on hunting, pursuit, possession, finding, collection, or searching for antlers, or an attempt to hunt, pursue, and possess, and so on and so forth, antlers. And the answer was, the short answer is no. And so what we're doing here with this bill, we're now trying to extend that requirement for the game and fish to now have authority over antlers and horns that have fallen off of animals and are now the property on private land of the private landowner. So it's a much different classification that we have here and what we're doing. So that's one of the reasons I was a no vote, because there's a lot of issues and problems with this bill. It's not that we don't maybe need to do something about this, fellow senators. We probably do. But I think we need a different kind of bill than this to be able to handle it. I think this thing, I just don't think that this was ready for prime time. And so I voted no on it, not because I'm opposed to having people stop people from going and trespassing on private land, but it just goes too far, and it weakens considerably the trespass laws that we have already in place.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're beginning to see some of the flaws with this, because we're not talking about Title VI. We're not talking about crimes and offenses. We're talking about wildlife laws that are special to wildlife. Antlers and horns are not wildlife. They don't belong in this statute. And to treat them like they were wildlife, again, assumes that they belong to the state. If what you want to do is provide that sheds, once they're shed from an animal, belong to the private landowner, then go create a statute that says there's a presumption of ownership for once the sheds are gone, they belong to the landowner. But at that point, it's then covered by crimes and offenses under Chapter 6. So if it's if there's trespass, then there's a trespass component. And if there's a provision that provides, if it's a theft of somebody's property, then it's theft of property. Whether it's and that's where that statute belongs, and that's the appropriate place. And using the example of a hay bale is a good example. We don't have a statute that says it's against the law to pick up hay. We do have a larceny. We have a burglary. If you're breaking the enclosures, we have various criminal statutes that are generic. And they're generic because they apply to everybody equally the same. And here we have now the proposal that somehow sheds are so particularly different than all other property that the Game and Fish, the state of Wyoming, is going to become the enforcement for collecting sheds. This is not the way to do it. It's not appropriate to put in the game and fish statutes. And if the issue is ownership and whether the landowner should own them, just declare it. Put it in the law that says once the shed drops on your side of the fence, it belongs to you.
Further discussion. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I'm a little ambivalent at this point in time, but a couple of clarifications. So the analogy was used, if an animal walks across your property and defecates, you probably own that because it's part of the soil. It's the same thing with antlers. They're organic. They're going to dissolve, and they're going to go back into the soil. So I think you could make the distinguishment that it's your property. Now, that being said, I'm not convinced this is the remedy, but let me tell you the problem under the current trespass laws is if you caught this individual on your property, and these things can be fairly valuable, into the thousands of dollars for a couple of deer horns if they're the right size and right shape. So you catch that person, and they've been out there, they've collected those very valuable deer horns, and you call the sheriff's department and you ask them to leave. they can leave. But there's nothing in the law that says they have to give up that collection that they picked up on your property. You would probably have to go to civil court and sue them as theft. And so I'm just highlighting the issue here. We got a problem out here, folks. These things are very valuable. In my part of the state, we have more trespass problems during antler hunting season. This is why the state's enacted a law to prohibit it for a certain period of time, at least until the animals have left. But we've got a serious problem out there because these things can be extremely valuable. We routinely have people that make thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars a year doing this. And quite frankly, some of them are unscrupulous. So neither on or for the bill. I don't know if this is the appropriate vehicle. Maybe it's to go into the existing trespass under Title VI and redress this issue through there. But we've got a problem out there.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and on and against the bill. There's a problem out there, but we all know when we deal with problems, you don't throw something at it. The way to do it is do it correctly in the proper title in the proper way. And as I listened to the debate, and quite frankly, I wasn't going to bring this bill up, but I thought it was important enough to have this discussion. We've had it. Now let's do the right thing, kill this bill, and let the travel committee come back and try to do it right.
Mr. President, did you want to speak?
No.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President. If we do adopt that remedy, and that may be the right remedy, let me suggest that one of the options that needs to be looked at is the larceny statutes and decide whether this is private property or not, decide whether larceny is the proper way to prosecute somebody who comes on and picks it up. But when you think about that, lots of people have collected lots of these things on state and federal land. We make it larceny to pick one of these up, use that approach. What happens when you do it on state or federal land? You've got a complicated little piece of law with some implications here. You better think pretty carefully about how we handle it and whether the trespass is the right statute to deal with it, whether larceny is right, whether it really is private property, what are the implications when it's found on state trust land? Are the schools being deprived of some revenue? Are these things getting that expensive? You know, it used to be you just pick them up because nobody cared. Didn't have any value. World's different now, Mr. Chairman. I've been surprised at what I've heard at some of the prices. Mr. Chairman, it may be good advice to kill this bill now, but you've got a problem that's growing out there. I suspect some of these people can come in and tear your place up pretty bad trying to get it. We've heard that some of them will run the animals and do some damage to the game trying to get them to shed where they can see it and pick it up. This is not a simple problem to solve, Mr. Chairman, and I do think it will probably take some very careful interim work, and whether it's judiciary or ag or TRW or what the appropriate committee is, that's a matter for the management council. But this is not amenable to just simplistic solutions, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bernard.
Mr. Chairman, I voted no against this in the committee. One of the reasons is because you could have somebody could collect antlers some other place, come on to another person's property, and then that person can't prove where they got the antlers. So somebody maybe was legally got some antlers, then they come on another person's property, and now they're fined for it. They lose all that thing. So that was one reason. The other thing I would like to speak about to the Senate is with the advent of these GPS GPS guidance systems, the bar has been raised on trespass because you can buy one of these instruments for about maybe $100, and they will tell you exactly where you're at, whether you're on private property, federal, BLM grant or where. So now the excuse, well, I didn't know I was on private property, that's becoming less and less. You really need one of these if you're going to be shedding, going on other people's land for to get shed antlers. You should know for sure whether that's private property. So that's another thing to consider.
Any other discussion on the bill? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 17 has failed a voice vote. I would ask for a standing division. All those in favor of House Bill 17. I thought you could all do this by yourself. All those in favor of House Bill 17, please stand up. All those opposed, please stand. Please sit. Pursuant to, it's eight, lost 18 to 10. Pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Bebout?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
No. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Escobel?
No.
No. Geis?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer? No. No. Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Excused.
Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
No.
No. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
No.
No. Ross? Excused. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 9 ayes, 20 no, 1 excused.
House Bill 17, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee hold rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 50, engrossed, do pass, amended. House Bill 6, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 95, do pass. House Bill 105, engrossed, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 117, do pass. House Bill 114, do pass. House Bill 81, do pass. House Bill 140, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 29, do pass, amended. House Bill 53, engrossed, do pass, amended. House Bill 118, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 97, engrossed, do pass, amended. House Bill 17, engrossed, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Mr. President.
Mr. Burns.
I move the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion's been adopted. We have concurrences? Senator Meyer, are you ready with respect to Senate file number 3?
Yes, Mr. President. I move for concurrence.
With the reading clerk?
Yes, absolutely.
And
message number 213, referencing Senate File 3, permissive preference for veterans in private employment.
Senator Meyer.
Yes, Mr. President. I move for concurrence on message 213, Senate File SF3. The only thing the House did, they've got a member over there that likes to change the effective date from July to effective immediately. I looked at the bill. There's no need for any rulemaking authority or anything like that that would contribute to that later effective date. So I would ask the body to vote aye.
The motion is that the Senate do concur with the House changes to Senate File 3, and you've been asked to vote aye. Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Oh, thank you.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel? Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross excused. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Closing vote?
Burns, aye to no.
Perkins, aye to no. Wasserberger, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Landon, aye to no. Hastert, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Kraft, aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 15 aye, 14 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur with the House amendments to Senate File Number 3. Senate File 28. Senator Von Platern, are you ready with respect to that? Would the reading clerk please read it in?
Message number 216. Referencing Senate File 28, Carbon Capture, Storage, and Sequestration Permit.
Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate does concur with the House and that you vote aye. All it did, they took this good little bill, and on page 3, starting with line 1, after regulations, it deleted the balance, and they put a reference in there to the rules. Instead of having pertaining to Class 2 underground injection control program, they actually put it in statute what the statute they were referring to was, which is fine. Didn't hurt anything on that. On page 3, line 9, you delete the director may participate, and on the next line, you delete in any hearing held under this subsection. So you're deleting the director may participate in any hearing under this subsection, because he is the one that's going to then take the recommendations from that hearing and make his decision, so they thought he shouldn't probably participate in the original hearing. That sounded fine with us. And then on page 3, line 14, took out the commission shall transfer
They took out the shall and put recommend. The commission recommend transfer. Then they put in of. So the commission recommend transfer of regulation of the operation to the department. Then they put a period and struck for consideration of a geological sequestration permit. They said the same thing, much cleaner. I asked the body to vote aye. They did a good job with the bill.
Any questions? Discussion? The motion is the Senate do concur with Senate File 28 changes proposed by the House, and you've been asked to vote aye. Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case? Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel?
Aye.
Aye. Guys?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross excused. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with the House amendments to Senate File 28 as reflected in message number 216. Senator Geis, are you ready with respect to Senate File 31 concurrence?
President.
Will the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Message number 217, referencing Senate File number 31, Omnibus Water Bill Planning.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, I move message number 217, which is Senate File 31, the Omnibus Water Bill, down on page 4, line 7. It's pertains to the amendment that was in there for the University of Wyoming to do the well, and they deleted 130 from the 400,000 that we had in there, so that leaves 270,000 in there to do the thing up for the water well. And I'd ask you to vote aye.
Any discussion? The question is, on message number 217, and the motion is to concur with the House Amendment Senate File 31, and you've been asked to vote aye. Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
No.
No. Pappas?
No.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross excused. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 27 aye, 2 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with the House amendments to Senate File 31 as reflected in message number 217. Senator Case, are you ready with respect to Senate File 34?
I am, Mr. President.
Would the reading clerk please read in the bill or the message?
Message number 218 regarding Senate File number 34, Uniform Fiduciary Access to Digital Assets Act.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move message number 218, the concurrence request for Senate File
34, Uniform Fiduciary Access to Digital Assets Act, and ask the Senate to vote aye. Mr. President, these are amendments were some that I've talked to the members in this body and some of the attorneys, not to you, Mr. President, I talked to the other ones, and they agree with it. And, Mr. President, they're pretty simple. If you look at it on page 5 of the bill, the language it said, fiduciary means a personal representative, trustee, executor, administrator, guardian, agent, conservator, distributee under Title II, Chapter 1 of the Wyoming Statutes. We took that out, Mr. President. The other amendments are simple and similar. Page 12, for example, a custodian shall disclose to a personal representative of the state of a deceased user and to a distributee holding a certified decree of a summary distribution of property. That language was removed, so now it just says the custodian shall disclose to a personal representative of the estate of a deceased user the content of electronic communications. Similar amendments throughout. I'd ask for your support and appreciate all the help on this.
Any further discussion? The motion is the Senate do concur with the House changes, House amendments to Senate file number 34, and you've been asked to vote aye. Roll call, please.
Anderson?
No.
No. Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns? Boner? Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe? Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Esquivel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross, excuse. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 27 aye, 2 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with the House amendments to Senate file number 34, as reflected in message number 218. Senator Von Fladern, are you ready with respect to Senate file 65? Will the reading clerk please read in the message?
Message number 221, referencing Senate file 65, patent trolling.
Senator Von Fladern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate does concur with the House amendments on Senate File 65, patent trolling. And the only big difference they made was on page 4. To go to lines 16 and 17, they deleted entirely the person officer who licensed the patent for an unreasonable amount. I think that was a little bit too subjective to him. And on 19, page 4, line 19, the person knew, or the original language was should have known. They struck that and put the person knew or believed that the claim of patent infringement is unenforceable. So just a little cleanup. And then the rest of it is a renumbering issue for all the way through. And I believe that's all they did. So the big change is they struck the person officer licensed patent for an unreasonable amount, as being probably too subjective. And on line 19, they struck should have known and inserted the word believed. I ask for your aye vote on this.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader, if you'd come forward. Senator Perkins.
Mr. President, as you vote on that, you ought to figure that when you look at that change and what that means, I think on lines 19 and 20 we just talked about, the person knew or should have known. When you do that, that's an objective standard. And what that means is that a person of normal person of ordinary circumstances, you know, that person should have known. When you change it to believed, I think that all that means is now that it makes it a subjective standard. So ultimately, all it means is that person, if they believe that, is subjective to them and their instance. And you find sometimes that in crimes, if you when you look at that, it's that objective standard. So, for example, in self-defense, that becomes sometimes in a subjective standard. You believe that your life was in danger at that point in time, and that's what justified that use. In this case, where you're moving away, and I think the effect of this amendment is to move it away to where now you have both new, which or believed, and I think what you're doing there is you're moving from an objective standard to a subjective standard, and that's a substantial reduction in the burden of proof, and that makes a substantial effect on this bill. So I think we want to think about this for a minute.
Thank you, Senator Perkins. Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think that I guess I would recommend that we vote no and send this back to the committee. These are elements that are traditional with respect to patent law. So, for example, the elimination of language that says a demand requires certain elements, and one is that the person offers to license a patent for an unreasonable amount. These patent trolls or submarine patents, whatever you're going to call them, there are certain elements that are found in patent law, and I suspect that the original bill adopts those terms, but it does make a difference if you have one of these patents on whether you offer it for reasonable license payments, and that's one of the elements of federal patent law. And to deviate that by saying, well, I don't know what it means, and therefore I'm going to delete it, I think is bad practice. So we ought to send it back to the committee and make sure that if this is a common law that was put together, I think is put together for purpose, and I bet you can find this language in federal patent law, and it's a required element.
Thank you, Mr. President. Further discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. And I will rise to urge a no vote on the basis of the page 4, line 19 change. It seems to me that you can prove that somebody, you may not be able to prove somebody knew something, but you may well be able to prove that there were documents that a reasonable person should have read and been knowledgeable, you can prove that they should have known it if they'd done reasonable due diligence. But you substitute believe for that, how the heck are you ever going to prove that one? I think that change may gut this particular piece of the law. And so I think that's another reason to vote no on this.
Any further discussion? The motion is the Senate do concur on Senate File 65, the amendments made by the House, and you've been asked to vote aye. Roll call.
Anderson?
No.
No. Barnard?
No.
No. Bebout?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe?
No.
No. Cooper?
No.
No. Kraft? No. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Esquivel?
No.
No. Geis?
No.
No. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
No.
No. Johnson?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
No.
No. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Ross excused. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
No.
No. Von Fladern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur with the House amendments to Senate File 65 as reflected in message number 221. Senator Peterson, are you ready with respect to Senate File 62?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Would the reading clerk please read in the message?
Message number 220, referencing Senate File 62, Homemade Beverages.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move concurrence on message number 220, referencing Senate File number 62, Homemade Beverages, and ask for the body to vote aye. Basically, what they did was they just basically changed the July 1st, 2016, and inserted immediately that verbiage. There was no problem in that. And that's the explanation. I'd ask the body to vote aye.
The motion is that the Senate do concur with Senate File, with the House amendments to Senate File 62. Excuse me, Senator Scott. I apologize.
No problem, Mr. President. Thank you. We're changing to an immediate effective date, and I think it's bad policy to make that change where you might affect innocent third parties, not part of the government, that might not get the word right away and affect them adversely. And that's, we just had, well, we didn't have the discussion, but we should have. On a previous bill, and this is the same issue, Mr. President. So the question I have for the proponent is, this is affecting private parties. Are there any of them out there that will be adversely affected or is given an unfair competitive advantage if they know about it and some of their rivals don't? In other words, are we doing any harm with this immediate effective date, or does it merely mean that if somebody wants to hold a Brewfest in June, they're perfectly all right? Is that all that's going on here?
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, the answer to the tall senator from Bates Creek's question is the latter, effective immediately for Brewfest that may be in June. As to the question about competitive disadvantage and such, this bill was fashioned carefully in concert with the State Liquor Division, the organization representing liquor dealers, the various home brewers, as well as craft brewers. And there's a consensus amongst all those groups that the bill, as finally crafted, is acceptable to all. Thank you, Mr. President.
The motion is the Senate do concur with the House amendments to Senate File 62, and you've been asked to vote aye. Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Co?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross excused. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 29 aye, 1 excused.
Enrolled acts. Sign enrolled acts. The conference committee for Senate File 65, Case Chairman Cooper and Rothfuss. Would you like some? Yeah, everybody wants a lawyer. No. Senate enrolled Act Number 20.
Senate enrolled Act Number 20 being original Senate file number 90, an act relating to game and fish licenses.
Senate enrolled Act Number 20 being original Senate file. I'm about ready to sign Senate enrolled Act Number 20 being original Senate file 90. I so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 21.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 21 being original Senate file 89, an act relating to labor and employment.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 21 being original Senate file 89. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 22.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 22 being original Senate file 44, an act relating to health care.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 22 being original Senate file 44. So signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 23.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 23 being original Senate file 20, an act relating to sales and use tax.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 23 being original Senate file 20. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 24.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 24 being original Senate File 4, an act relating to the military department.
I'm about ready to sign original Senate File. Excuse me, I'm about ready to sign Senate File. Let me try that again. I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 24 being original Senate File 4. I've so signed. Anything else? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, March the 1st.
Announcements. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, a previously announced meeting, Committee number 10 is supposed to meet with our Light Committee of the House on adjournment of the House. I don't know when that's going to be, so Committee number 10 members, be findable. If they run too late, we may have to do something else, but I don't know what the something else can be. So that the meeting, to my knowledge, is still on, but it depends how long they rate, Mr. President.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number one will meet Tuesday upon noon recess, Jonah H-38, to continue interim topic discussion with our counterparts in the House.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Joint Legislative Executive Task Force on Department of Health Facilities will be meeting March 3rd, that's Thursday, 12:15, in room L-54, that's the room that resembles old 302.
Chairman Boner.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Joint Conference Committee number one will meet on the 1st of March tomorrow at the noon recess in room S-27. We'll be discussing Senate File number 42, Occupational Therapy Practice Act.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Joint Travel Committee number six.
Oh, let me try that again here. Oops. Let's try that.
Okay. There, your green light's on. Yes, Mr. President, your Joint Travel Committee number six will meet tomorrow morning, Tuesday, at 8 a.m. in H-38 over in the House side to meet with the Light Committee to discuss interim topics.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your Senate Agriculture Committee number five will meet with our counterparts down the hall at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning donor room H36 to discuss interim topics.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your Select Water Committee will meet upon adjournment tomorrow night in room L54 to handle amendments on the water program.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, this is a change from the Joint Education Committee number 4. We were going to meet tonight on adjournment, but the House is down the hall kicking tires. And so we're going to meet tomorrow, 15 minutes after the noon recess, to discuss interim topics in Jonah Room L54.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, your Joint Appropriations Committee will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, March 1st, at 9 a.m. in Room L55, the Joint Appropriations Room, to discuss interim topics.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Senator Case.
Mr. President, I'm calling an automatic here. The previously scheduled interim topics committee for your select committee on process and technology is going to hold their interim meeting tomorrow night instead of tonight. And the reason we're doing it is the House says they're going until 8. So tomorrow night we'll reschedule and get a notice out.
Senator, Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Annual Council will meet upon adjournment on Wednesday in L54 to discuss interim topics.
Any further messages, announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate shall stand and adjourn until tomorrow, Tuesday, March 1, 10 a.m.